Sugatsia for my friends at Casper. Years of research, hundreds of tests, thousands of iterations. The result? The latest and dreamiest in sleep innovation, including the new mattresses from Casper. Casper has done it again with all new mattresses. Waking up with back pain? Introducing Zone Support, Casper's unique ergonomic system designed to keep your spine aligned when you sleep. There's something brand new called Airscape, engineered foam layers with perforations that help regulate your sleep temperature. From bedding, bed frames, and even a dog bed, Casper has everything to build the dream bedroom for every kind of sleeper. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for years. I swear by it. Most comfortable mattress I've ever slept on. Anytime they have new innovations, I am in on that. And as always, free shipping and free returns. And now Casper is offering free contactless delivery. And as always, free returns. Go to Casper.com. Use code Lebatard for $100 off your mattress order. That's code Lebatard for $100 off your mattress order. Terms and conditions apply. See Casper.com/terms.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I want to get to this bat bleep crazy story involving Sammy Watkins. It was written by Bleacher Report. We will get to it with the author who wrote it at 11 a.m. Eastern. Sammy Watkins, one of the best college wide receivers I've ever seen, goes to Buffalo, is a bit of a bust, goes to Kansas City, it works out fine, and now he is giving opinions that are really counterculture, really unusual. I asked Chris Cody to give me a one-sheet, a one-sheet condensing the most interesting things in the article. And Stugatz, what he sent me was longer than the article.
Yeah.
He sent me so many details, so many bullet points that were longer than the article because, you know, condensing isn't a strength with him. And also, there's that much in there that's rich and different. But we will get to that in a second. The first thing that we have to get to is Billy wants to celebrate how Stugatz owned all of ESPN yesterday during a dry desert of content time. Stupidity rose up. I also want to talk to Stugatz about how much trouble he got into at ESPN for getting Tom Brady, but not going through whatever their proper labyrinth of protocols is because, you know, someone in the NFL department is having their head pop off because they wanted to ask Tom Brady an important question.
I didn't get into any trouble as far as I know because no one reached out to me. Not a single person. Nobody reached out to me about Tom Brady yesterday.
Well,
except, you know, except for you, Mike Golic Jr., Mikey C., and a couple of other people. Other than that, not a peep.
All right, you named about a half dozen people while saying nobody reached out to you. But Stugatz was offended that no one complimented him on it, while also burying his producer in questions about why it is that we got Tom Brady before, you know, the rest of Mighty ESPN got Tom Brady. I will say this. Stugatz was keeping it even from me because he was afraid that if anyone at ESPN got it, that they would get in there and they would nuke the ability of Stupidity to do it first. That was something that you were calculated and hiding it from ESPN and from me.
I want to be very, very clear. I am not offended that no one reached out to me yesterday. I am perfectly fine that no one reached out to me yesterday. I was expecting maybe someone, one of our bosses, to say, hey, that a boy, good job, Friday night, you stayed home, you got Tom Brady. Of course, we're all staying home right now. But I was not the least bit offended that no one reached out to me. And I didn't sit on any news. I don't know the protocols, okay? All I do is generate content. And when my producer decides to release it, that's when he decides to release it. I don't know any of these rules, okay?
You do know the protocols. You know the rules. You say you don't know the rules in order to break the rules. And I didn't realize the hashtag one team you sent me was sincere yesterday. Regardless, Billy's got some thoughts on ESPN. ESPN and basically Stugatz yesterday dominating ESPN. The worldwide leader in sports finally reached the biggest platform in sports. Stupidity bigger than Oprah. Billy, what were your thoughts as you saw this mushroom cloud on television? It had me smiling from ear to ear just seeing, and I understand that it's a desert right now and probably SportsCenter will take just about anything. I'm surprised all our Greg Norman interviews didn't end up on SportsCenter. But I was really happy for Stugatz yesterday because the whole goal of this entire pirate ship is to use my obnoxious, strident journalism credentials so that Stugatz at the end could be at the top of the worldwide leader in sports, scurry up my back and plant his flag of stupidity, which doesn't have a flag, it's just a pole, in the back of my head because he has conquered all of the gas bags in sports journalism. Yesterday, Stugatz was on top. What were your thoughts, Billy?
Stugatz owned the day yesterday, and like you said, it was great seeing and hearing a clip from Stupidity run all over SportsCenter and everywhere. Now, it's kind of a testament to what's going on right now that they were able to get a clip out of the Stupidity thing and play it everywhere, because I don't know if you heard the whole Stupidity, but it was a very brief interview. Now, in terms of protocol, I think it was basically going to be Stupidity or Tom Brady's not going to be on ESPN anywhere. So they're happy with just Stugatz getting Tom Brady on Stupidity. Here's where I think that they did you wrong, Stugatz.
Okay.
If anyone else would have had a sit down with Tom Brady, and Chris too, actually, to a certain extent, they would have been on SportsCenter talking about their time with Tom Brady, what he was like before they started. I mean, anytime Mina Kimes interviews anyone, she's on every show on the network, and people are like, Mina, what did this, what did Miles Garrett say about this and that? And no one talked to Stugatz about what Tom Brady was doing. So in that, you know, even Chris Cody could have been on SportsCenter yesterday talking about his time with Tom Brady, and they didn't ask him.
Stugatz, I think that I am willing to take on this crusade, even if it means we are steamrolling Mina Kimes, where we are actively jealous of the amount of promotion and publicity that she is getting, while nobody at ESPN helps us with any of that stuff, like at all. No, there's nobody there who helps us with any of that stuff. We're your biggest digital property with no help from you guys.
I mean, I spent a segment yesterday saying how I've learned more talking about football with Mina Kimes than anyone at the network, one or in the Monday Night Football booth. Not a peep about my Brady interview from Mina Kimes yesterday. Not a peep. Nothing.
You have something else here? Do you have something else here, Billy? Or are you just waving your hand in front of your face because you're backing away from the microphone because you don't want any part of my feuding with ESPN over Mina Kimes getting more publicity than we do?
Yeah. Let's just clarify this for a moment. I just picked Mina's name out of a hat there. That was not intended to take a shot at Mina Kimes and use that as a springboard for you to be going after whoever over Mina Kimes.
It did sort of feel like a shot. You said anytime they interview that Mina Kimes interviews anybody, they put her all over the network.
Or any of them, you know? Basically anyone but Stugatz and Chris Cody.
Let's just say that Tom Brady landed on the wrong platform, landed in the wrong hands. Is that fair? And I'm okay with that. It landed in my hands. And if that comes to the disappointment of many at this network, I apologize. You take Tom Brady when you can get him, where you can get him. And I happened to be home Friday night when he was walking off some of the golf course, and I was more than happy to spend seven mediocre minutes with him. Right, that's it.
I love that that's how you describe it. It's so perfect that he won you over in seven mediocre minutes after you hated him for two decades as a Jets fan. Tony, I'm sorry I sideswiped you there by saying that Bristol has given us no help while you've been a part of our show for many, many months now. Chris, what can you tell us about the Sammy Watkins article? We're going to have the author, Tyler Dunn, on with us an hour. But now that you've done all of the research and every paragraph is more unusual than the one before it, what were your takeaways from the article?
Well, it was a roller coaster of emotion. It starts out and you think this is a comedy. Cause I'm reading this. I'm like, what kind of article is this going to be? You read the first couple paragraphs and you're like, okay, this is a comedy. You have Watkins saying that he possibly is playing football as a horse, as a dog, as a dinosaur. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be fun and wacky. And then it gets a little sad. And then he talks about how depressed he was, how when he was in Buffalo, he's drinking every night, literally every night, just very depressed. And then he finds himself, he spends 6 months just in his room, not talking to anybody, studying every religion he can find. And then he comes out on the other end and he's found some spirituality that has led him to a path where he's happy. All his teammates love his energy. And he has a great relationship with Andy Reid. He was very, like, I'm just going to keep going because the article's crazy. And then he talks about his contract situation with the Chiefs. He's very open about his demands. And it took me forever to read it because it's the longest article ever. But it's very interesting, and it seems to have ended in a place where he's found himself a little bit.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Would you drink every night if you were in Buffalo, at Lebatard Show? Sammy Watkins believes in reincarnation, and he's searching. And you know that I love the eccentric guys. I love the guys who are willing to be out there with their vulnerability. One of the things I want to get into with you guys in the next segment, Stugatz, is that Jerry Seinfeld has a new special out, and it's really testing the boundaries of what I have said about comedy not aging well. He's 65. It's surprising to see him be able to literally be on the floor physically and get off the floor quickly at 65 years old to do this comedy routine. And of course, it now has its haters and its detractors because, surprise, putting something creative in the world risks not everyone applauding. In fact, it's kind of the point. I don't know. There is no courage in criticizing the creative. There's only courage in creating the creative and then trusting that vulnerability over to others. But I want to talk about what I have seen of this Seinfeld special next after you update people on what's going on in sports.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. The Last Dance concludes this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Good morning, Finney. Immediately after the show airs, listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby, the after show presented by State Farm and AT&T. The guys will be joined by director Jason Ayer to talk about this week's show and behind-the-scenes stories of the making of the episode. Subscribe now to Jalen and Jacoby, the after show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Here's your SportsCenter update. Participants on a board of governors call with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver left the virtual meeting feeling increasingly positive about the league's momentum towards a resumption of play this season. Meanwhile, an informal poll taken by the National Basketball Players Association showed overwhelming support for any plan that has this season resuming in a safe way. And finally, Spotify has launched the beta version of its newest feature for premium subscribers called Group Sessions, which allows a host to present a scannable code to as many guests with a premium account, giving all users control over the ability to play, pause, and skip, and select or add a specific song to the collective playlist. The All In Challenge fundraising initiative continues to offer exciting sports experiences that you can bid on or enter to win. And it's all to support organizations providing food to those in need. Dana White and actress Halle Berry are teaming up to provide the ultimate UFC experience for the All-In Challenge. The winner will go to Las Vegas, UFC pay-per-view event of their choice, meet Dana White, have dinner with Halle Berry, and then watch the fight with her from Dana White's seats. And that's not all. The winner will also get a private training session with UFC legends. You can enter to win this sweepstakes, and 100% of the money raised will benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you'd like to participate or learn about how these organizations can help, visit allinchallenge.com today. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
The author of this Sammy Watkins article for Bleacher Report, Tyler Dunn, is going to join us in a half hour. If you've not seen the story, he will condense it for you. And it is as unusual an interview as you will find anywhere in sports. Usually guys with alternative beliefs don't express them while they're still playing. That is not a normal, usual thing in the antiseptic cliche of the locker room.
It was, you're going to be shocked that I read this, but it was very, very well written. I thought it had like the right tempo and the right urgency attached to a story like this. And I'm telling you, Dan, I have been inside for so long that I am willing to go down just about any path. I am not ruling out what Sammy Watkins is telling me in terms of dimensions and knowing things and we're constantly dying and coming back to life. I am not ruling anything out at this point. Okay? That's all I'm saying.
Thank you for saying it. Do you have any idea what you said when you said that the article had the right urgency?
I felt like it, you know, whatever Sammy was saying, I feel like the author wrote it in a way.
Okay, yeah, just words. Yeah, just, they were just words to say. Okay, yeah. Very good. Yep. Tyler Dunn is going to join us at 11 o'clock Eastern. Billy, what do you have for me on this subject? Did you just feel bad for Stukats? Because, Billy, I got to be honest, your face is a helpful cue for me in terms of whenever you make a face, like if you've smelled something bad, it makes me extra listen because I want to remember what it is Stukats said. I'm curious, was that reaction to Stukats saying the article had the right urgency? I don't even know what that means.
I feel bad doing this, and Stukats, you know I love you, which now gives me permission to rip you.
Sure.
I don't believe that he read it, and right. Part of my theory hinges on the fact that he did a reply all to the email where you asked for a one sheet asking for Chris to send him the same one sheet, which would mean that he didn't need to read it.
Right. Well, so that's a fair point. I've earned that, Billy. But I read it last night. Retention is not a strength. And so I knew I was going to need that one sheet as a refresher from Chris. Now, Chris just rewrote the article. So, I mean, it's not really, I don't want to read it again, but I did read it. So, I mean, and I'm telling you, right tempo, proper amount of urgency. That was a good job by the writer.
All right. Right. I had, okay, very good. So anyway, just words, 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 also words and words and words and words and Advanced Auto Parts and words. The thing that I wanted to get into here with you, Stukats, because I felt bad for someone yesterday and the baseball discussion happening right now, it's interesting to see the owners of baseball who don't actually get to play games, but their games are negotiating contracts. Their games are winning at business to sort of change around their original proposal in order to make the players look bad for possibly causing a work stoppage while there are breadlines and unemployment rates are historic and it feels like the Great Depression. Make the baseball players look greedy. This is how the owners play this game. You don't have to take a side on this one. You're allowed to say, well, the owners are losing their fans, so they should ask for pay cuts the way that Governor Cuomo is telling them to take pay cuts. And I understand if you said that. I would get if you would protect the business owner's right to protect the business, even as I don't understand and won't ever understand why so many of you end up calling the players selfish while you yourself are being selfish, wanting baseball back, and while you yourself are labor and you don't side with labor. But here is why I felt bad for your buddy, Mark Teixeira. Did you see what happened to him?
No, what happened?
All right, so Teixeira comes out and he says publicly, I think it was on Get Up, he says that he thinks the players should play for pennies on the dollar. And this, of course, is going to be met by the sports fan with a great deal of applause, but it might not be met by the player with a great deal of applause. For example, Brandon McCarthy, this is the problem when you do the thing that makes everyone pay attention. When Teixeira says the baseball players should play on pennies on the dollar, that they basically should inherit more risk and less money.
Right.
More health risk and less money. Brandon McCarthy reminds you by going through Teixeira's history, he reminds you, Tex was quite possibly the most pro-union player I came across in my career. And then this is what Mike Schur, the creator of Parks and Rec and a huge baseball fan, says, and this is the part that made me feel bad for Teixeira. Teixeira was drafted in 1998, asked for too much money, turned it down. Then he was drafted fifth in 2001, would have been fourth, but everyone knew he was asking for so much money, the Phillies didn't even bother. Then he made $213 million. So Scher says this is all fine, of course, but also zip it, proving yet again that there is a little Stugatz in everyone. So when this happens, your thoughts are what? Because it's real easy for him to tell others pennies on the dollar when he's no longer playing and he's already made $213 million worth of pennies.
Right. Now, I know Mark. I'm friendly with Mark. Mark was also never faced with a pandemic like this, so I have no earthly idea how he would have responded or how he would have acted had he been faced with a pandemic like this. And in terms of the money that he asked for, listen, you don't know unless you ask. But I will say this, okay? I will say this. Any Major League Baseball player who does not want to play for less money, who does not want to risk health and harm to his own body, does not want to leave his family or loved ones behind to go play baseball for our amusement and our enjoyment, I am totally fine with that. Totally okay with that. Just accept the other side of it. You're not going to get paid. In terms of playing for pennies on the dollar, no. If you're going to play baseball, they should pay you properly for playing baseball in the middle of a pandemic, putting yourself at risk and leaving your loved ones behind to do so, if indeed that is the case.
I do find perpetually interesting the way this stuff ends up going, Stugatz, because you've got the Illinois governor saying he's disappointed with Major League Baseball players holding out for more money when, quote, everyone is sacrificing. And I just think that this ignores in a way that is really borderline intellectually dishonest that these people are partners on collectively bargaining their contracts. If the people in our audience had leverage, they'd use it. Like, if they had a choice, if they had the privilege of partnership with their bosses, they'd use it. But most of us don't have that privilege. We love to take it away from others, though. I'll tell you somebody else I feel bad for next.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection just got easier with more than 30 coverage options available. Progressive has you covered. More at progressivecommercial.com. Tune into the conclusion of The Last Dance this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Tyler Dunn of Bleacher Report wrote the article about Sammy Watkins. Going to join us in just a minute. Here's your SportsCenter update. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has opened the door for professional sports to return to the state without fans. The NCAA won't mandate or oversee a uniform return to college sports. NCAA President Mark Emmert said Tuesday, leaving decisions on start dates to state officials and university presidents. And finally, a woman who allegedly entered Yellowstone National Park illegally yesterday was trying to back up to take a photo when she fell into a hot spring at the Old Faithful Geyser. She was flighted to Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center and had serious burns. Try to update that one for you. SportsCenter is brought to you by Blue Emu. From one of America's most trusted brands comes a new maximum strength arthritis pain relief cream. I love it. I use it all the time. Blue Emu maximum arthritis pain relief cream is non-greasy, deep penetrating, and it's odor-free. Don't let joint pain strike you out. reach for Blue Emu Maximum Arthritis Cream. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Before we get to the meat of this article, the interesting stuff, the unusual stuff about Sammy Watkins, I want to talk to the author, Tyler Dunn of Bleacher Report, about what he thought going into this. Like, what was the journey going to look like? What did he intend on doing when this started with Sammy Watkins? And was he surprised by where it ended up going? Because the best articles like these, Stu Guys, you follow the subject where he wants to go to the places of his interest, and you find the best stuff, as opposed to going into it with a preconceived notion and then trying to write before you've actually talked to the person.
I would imagine, even if Sammy gave you the gist of it, sitting down with Sammy and actually hearing it come out of his mouth, you're still stunned by it, I would imagine.
All right, well, let's find out. Tyler Dunn of Bleacher Report joins us now on ESPN Radio. Thank you for doing so. So which way did it go, Tyler? Explain to us how it is that you started this journey.
No doubt, Dan. I think you just kind of nailed it, really. This relationship kind of goes back to when I was at the Buffalo News covering the Bills in 2015. The first conversation I had with Sammy Watkins, actually, he commanded the ball 10 times a game, told the Bills they were making themselves look bad, making him look bad. And lo and behold, he was right. They started getting him the ball, and he performed. That was kind of the one moment of joy for him through some pretty deep depression in Buffalo. But we just kind of kept in touch. Did a story on him when he was in L.A. And then down in Miami during Super Bowl week. You know, all the players are available at all those tables and in the hotel where they stay. And we just kind of caught up, just kind of BS. We were talking, and he just said, hey, I feel an energy here. I feel a vibe. I want to get together once this season ends. And I kind of thought he was talking mostly about all the rubble, you know, left behind in Buffalo with being down and the depression. And I knew there was something there. I had heard that, you know, he might have had a drinking problem or was partying, and there was a little bit more to everything he was dealing with, you know, in addition to the football problems. But yeah, there's no way did I expect him to go all the directions he did. We got together in his favorite restaurant, you know, around Orlando, and bar restaurant, the Big Easy, and he just started talking. He just, you know, like you kind of put there, you just follow along on a stream of consciousness and try to buckle in and hold on tight.
Was he self-medicating because he had not yet learned how to identify as a young male with introspection what depression looks like and feels like?
Yeah, I'm not the roots of that, you know, in terms of the self-medicates. That's hard to tell. I just think it was that combination of his stepbrother getting taken away, involved in a huge RICO racketeering case in his hometown. It was not getting the ball and seeing the Odell Beckhams of the world blow up in the same draft. It was all of the drinking then, you know, destroying his body. I mean, he made that connection himself that it was pretty self-inflicted. And I just think kind of one thing led to the other. He didn't really just take a deep breath and recognize and realize he was doing a lot of this to himself, and all the pressure back home kind of weighed on him. So, you know, after the third foot injury, after he cried in the arms of his position coach and just decided to basically lock himself in his room and just fall down every rabbit hole he could, learn about every religion, learn about the universe, about fourth dimensions, and just challenge his mind like he never did before, just to figure out, like, what in the heck am I doing on this planet? Like, why am I here? I mean, he was really asking himself these really deep questions. And yeah, I know a lot of this stuff, it might seem wild and ridiculous and insane to a lot of people, but, you know, he believes a lot of this stuff, and it helped him get out of that, this really, really dark place.
Tyler, how did he come off to you? Was it calm, crazy, sane? Like, you were there with him. How did he come off to you?
Calm. I mean, you know, there were, you know, a couple moments there when he's talking about darkness and demons and seeing death, whatever the form of that death was early on when he was researching a little too far, but unbelievably calm, smiling, a chuckle here and there. But as we wrote, I mean, he said again and again, you know, I'll put this on my kids in terms of that Jacksonville game and making defenders just freeze in place as he's playing out of body in terms of maybe his soul leaping into the body of another player. I mean, again and again, I mean, it just kind of took all these just wild directions. But, you know, as his teammates kind of said, they don't just, like, write him off as some crazy uncle, you know, in the locker room. I mean, once you're in, you're in. And he's sitting down with Felton Davis talking about teleportation and the fact that he witnessed somebody teleport and he might be an alien. He's seen a spaceship. He has that effect. You know, I think in our conversation, you know, you kind of feed off energy. He feeds off good energy, tries to deflect the bad. So, and that transfer of energy, you just try to kind of ride along with it all. I mean, he had me thinking about out-of-body experiences that I had. And he's like, all right, now imagine that moment being like that all the time. I can control my body from the outside. So, yeah, there's a lot going on here. And he admits, like, he's still working on it. He can't see these other dimensions quite yet, but he believes he can feel them.
Condense this for us, please. Tyler Dunn with us, Bleacher Report. He's written an article in which Sammy Watkins has a whole host of unconventional beliefs. Go ahead and give me in the next 90 seconds for the people who have not read the article what you as the author believe to be the most unusual thing. You've gotten to some of them that Sammy Watkins believes.
Whew, that's a good question. I would say the ability to manifest outcomes in his dreams. That point of the conversation started with him telling me that I'm dying right now over and over and I don't even know it. And I said, what are you talking about, Sammy? He said, well, when you go to sleep, you're not just sleeping, you're somewhere else. And he believes through the astral realm, you can go there and play a football game before that game is played in our physical bodies the next day. And he gave an example, the AFC Championship game, that 114-yard game, he said that was played out before he went out there. And, yeah, I mean, I think what's important to remember, guys, I mean, this is Sammy Watkins on the other side. I've gotten a lot of messages like, is he mentally okay? Is he off kilter? Is he arguing? He needs help. I mean, he is in the best mental state, mental place, mental space I've ever seen him back to those Buffalo days.
Again, Tyler Dunn with us on ESPN Radio. Not to be disappointed by your answer, but in terms of him thinking he's been a horse playing football, there's a whole lot of stuff you could have gone to there that would have been just as interesting as the dream world. You're allowed to revise your answer or elaborate if you'd like, because if you want to just give people the bullet points on the unusual things, I think the people who have not read the article would have a good reason to read it, because there's a lot in there.
Horse, dinosaur. He thinks that when he can manifest the sun, he'll come back and live through his son one day. There's a lot there. There's a lot there, no doubt. And, I think he really does believe. Yeah, we've been reincarnated back and forth. We already have.
Tyler, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it, sir.
And thank you. And real quick, too, in researching for this, I enjoyed your conversation with Mike Tyson back a few years back, talking about entering these dimensions. So there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, this only scratches the surface.
Thank you, sir. Tyler Dunn of Bleacher Report. You should check out the article. It is interesting. It's somebody who's trying to think differently and doesn't appear to care what you think about the fact that he thinks differently, which makes me a Sammy Watkins fan just for that by itself.
If you missed any of our interviews, please check them out on demand in the Dan Le Batard Show podcast, brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checking or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. Dan, it's time for Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless.
Stan Van Gundy going to join us here in about 10 minutes. Brett Michaels going to join us at 12:30 Eastern. You mentioned it is time for Straight Talk, Stugatz, and I thought that Charles Barkley gave it to us, as he always does, earlier this week when he wondered something that I wonder why more isn't being made of what I'm about to say. Jerry Krause, the general manager of the Bulls, featured in The Last Dance, the late Jerry Krause, can't defend himself. And I do believe that part of what's happening here is with Michael Jordan and with the audience is physically it is just so very easy when he is surrounded by these statuesque people who are the height of human athletic achievement to make fun of this person. And the thing that Barkley said that I found interesting, and I'm curious what you think of this, and I'm curious why it's happening, is right in the middle of all 10 parts of this series, Jerry Reinsdorf is the guy with the money. Jerry Reinsdorf is the reason that those teams didn't stay together, because Jerry Reinsdorf, as the last voice, could have kept everyone together. Jerry Krause got that job, at least in part, because he was the punching bag for Jerry Reinsdorf. And I just love the revisionist history on sticking him in the middle of the documentary as someone whose voice is of altruism when he says, I gave Michael $3 million while he wasn't playing. Yeah, you did, because you were hoping he'd come back and continue the money machine going for you forever. It's the best investment that you ever made, paying him $3 million while he was away from the game. But the idea that the documentary doesn't tackle, while just eviscerating a dead man, the idea that the guy who's still alive right in the middle of it should be getting some hard questions about why the hell he didn't do what needed to be done to override the power of his general manager who's getting crucified, it's because he knows he's the one responsible for it. And the remaking of the story protects him in a way that more than it should, because he has been a mom and pop owner who cuts costs for a long time, and he did it with one of the greatest teams ever assembled and the greatest athlete ever assembled.
In that docuseries, Reinsdorf tells the story of how he asked many people about Jerry Krause, and not a single person had a single good word to say about Jerry Krause, and yet he still hired him to be the general manager of the Bulls, I think in large part because he could control Jerry Krause. He could tell Jerry Krause what to do. But you're right, those questions should be aimed at Reinsdorf, and they're not. At least Reinsdorf can give you answers. Krause obviously can't. But, Dan, it is puzzling to a lot of people why a GM would not fight harder to keep a team who had won 6 and 8 years and would have won 8 and 8 years, would not fight harder with the owner.
He was doing his job. What are you talking about? How often have you fought harder with your boss? Like, what, he was doing his job.
When you're fighting for Michael Jordan, I feel like you fight with your boss. Like, when you're fighting to keep Michael Jordan around, I feel like that's a fight worth fighting. I do. I mean, you don't do it often, but for Jordan, I would.
The thing that people don't seem to understand is that Jerry Krause was better at his job than Jerry Reinsdorf is at his job. And the idea, well, you say no doubt, but I think this documentary is leaving that doubt all over the place. It's placing that doubt in your lap again and again, while again celebrating the dude in the middle of it who can't shut up about wanting to be in the center of it when he's the one who broke it up.
It's hard to ignore because the docuseries is essentially about Jordan. So it's hard to ignore all the footage they have of Jordan taking shots at Jerry Krause. But I do feel like if you're paying attention, the docuseries has gone out of its way to point out that he got him Scottie Pippen, that he got him Horace Grant, that he ended up getting Tony Kukoc, who ended up being a good player, that he ended up getting Steve Kerr and Dennis Rodman and all these guys in free agency, that he really surrounded Jordan with the parts he needed to finally win some titles. I feel like they've done a decent job of that. But your larger point is still right. Your anger should be directed at Jerry Reinsdorf, and so should Michael Jordan's. I mean,
it's not my point, to be clear. It's Charles Barkley's. I agree with it because he's absolutely right. I'm sure Stan Van Gundy has some interesting opinions on this. We'll get to him next.
That is Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. Stan Van Gundy, oh, do I miss him. He is going to join us here in just a minute. Here's your SportsCenter update. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has opened the door for professional sports to return to the state without fans. The NCAA will not mandate or oversee a uniform return to college sports, NCAA President Mark Emmert said Tuesday, leaving decisions on start dates to state officials and university presidents. And finally, there have been rumors that arch nemesis, am I saying that right? I don't know. Katy Perry and Taylor Swift have a collaboration on the way. SportsCenter is brought to you by Blue Emu. From one of America's most trusted brands comes a new maximum strength arthritis pain relief cream. Blue Emu maximum arthritis pain relief cream is non-greasy, deep penetrating, and it's odor free. It's fantastic. Don't let joint pain strike you out. Reach for Blue Emu maximum arthritis cream. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
I miss him too, Stugatz. The audience misses him. Stan Van Gundy was the executive we had in our weird stable, but he is gone now, off to bigger and better things. We appreciate his time here. I have a number of different questions for him, but if you've been listening to us for a long time, you know Stan loves baseball, I think, as much as basketball. So let me start here with what's going on with the players and the owners and that negotiation, Stan, and thank you for making the time for us. What from afar have you made of the idea that now the governor of Illinois and a whole bunch of other people are saying that baseball players need to make sacrifices when it comes to the amount of money they get for risking playing in the coming future?
Yeah, I'm just always amazed when sports organizations have an impact between millionaire players and billionaire owners, that fans tend to always be on the side of the owners. I mean, that's just really has always amazed me. So it's just more of interest to me than anything. The players will be characterized as greedy, but the billionaire owners who can survive losses better than anyone don't get the same animosity from fans. I mean, I don't know where all that comes from. It's just funny to me.
Doesn't it start with the owner's interest or align with the fan's interest so the fan can claim the player is selfish while not noticing that the fan, him or herself, is being selfish by just wanting their games back?
Well, but I can understand wanting the games back, but I don't understand why their wrath doesn't go to the owners and just say, hey, it's the players we want to see. Pay them. Pay them. We don't care about you guys. Pay them. But they don't. They turn on the players as if the players are greedy. And I don't know what's right or wrong. Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. But it's just interesting to me. Every time I've seen this, whether it's been the NBA lockouts or baseball lockout, football went through it, it's always the players are greedy, and it's never turned on these billionaire, you know, scions of business that have all this money. The fans side with them. I don't get it. I don't see how the average fan's interest is more aligned with the ownership than it is with the workers.
Stan, in this particular case, the fan, I don't view it as, you know, so much as siding as I do. Fans don't really care. They just want to see baseball. They want some feel good in their lives, and the baseball players control whether or not they're going to play. I know the owners have, you know, have a position in that, but the fans really don't care. It's not siding with ownership. It's siding with, hey, figure it out, get out there and play because I am home. I am miserable. And then there's a lot of fans, Stan, who would say, hey, I'd play any sport right now for any amount of money because I am sitting home and I don't have money.
Yeah, but I still don't understand why that falls on the players. You can say the players, you started off by saying the players control whether they play or not. You can look at it, you have the owner's control. Give the players what they want and the players will play. I mean, the responsibility is on the owners. I mean, the players will play, from what I understand anyway, the players will play to what they already agreed with, which is the same amount of money they signed for, prorated to an 82-game season. They'll play for half their money. But now the owners are saying, wait a minute, 40% of our revenue comes from fans in the park, so we want to pay you even less. And what we want to do is essentially a salary cap, which we've never had in baseball, where we're going to split the revenue basically 50-50. Why aren't fans just saying, hey, owners, give the players what they want. We want our games back. Why do they target the players? I don't get it.
Stan Van Gundy with us on ESPN Radio. We don't have to keep talking about this particular thing, but I would say that the reason that that happens in terms of perception is because some of them are playing a game for a lot of money, and some of the owners, when they're looked at, no matter how dumb they might be, there is an assumed or perceived merit and difficulty in being able to make millions upon millions of dollars in business. It's viewed by the fan as more honorable, even though getting to the major leagues is harder than getting their kind of rich.
Well, yeah, and let's not forget that a lot of these owners inherited the money. So at some point, maybe their forefathers built these business empires, and it took great intelligence. But a lot of these people simply inherited it, so I don't know that it was any great accomplishment that got them to having a lot of money. So, I'm not sure I'm going there that all of these, you know, owners in baseball, all 30 of them, earned their money.
Oh, I'm talking about the perception, though. I'm not talking about whether it's actually so. I think that the average fan thinks it's harder to become rich in business than it is to play baseball at an elite level.
Oh, and it may be if you have to start from where most people are and get to that level of money. But the fact is, those people didn't start there. I mean, you know, there aren't very many of those owners who started with nothing and became billionaires and now own teams. I mean, there's a few. There are a few, but not many. And so I just, like I say, the whole thing on how fans view owners as opposed to how they view players has just always been of great interest to me and something that confuses me.
Well, help me with this, because we were talking before you came on about the Michael Jordan documentary. Are you as confused as I am, speaking of owners sort of skating, on how it is that Krause is getting bludgeoned, but Reinsdorf gets to be in the center talking about the altruism of giving Michael Jordan $3 million to play baseball?
Yeah, look, that the whole series has been interesting to me just in terms of perceptions of a lot of things. First of all, the fact that Krause is being bludgeoned, that has always been interesting to me well, long before The Last Dance. This guy, you know, is the guy who built it, and he went out and drafted guys like, you know, Scottie Pippen, like from Central Arkansas. But the only thing we remember Jerry Krause for is that Pippen didn't like him because he didn't get the contract he wanted. And then, you know, Jordan said on one of the earlier episodes, you know, Scottie wanted his contract renegotiated, and Jerry just wasn't going to do that, as if that's acceptable. But Reinsdorf renegotiated Jordan's contract. So, you know, I don't know. The whole thing is interesting. It's like Jordan being, you know, a guy who was sort of an a-hole, as Will Perdue said, to his teammates. That's all forgiven because of his great will to win. That explains it. But Isaiah Thomas doesn't get the same benefit of the doubt for his competitiveness. And the reason, even a good guy as David Robinson said, the reason Isaiah's not on the wasn't on the Dream Team is nobody liked him. I mean, it's just the contradictions in all of these things, I think, has made this series interesting to me, is how people's perceptions are of these athletes and the personalities involved and how they really don't make a lot of sense.
In terms of value to Reinsdorf, Stugatz, Jerry Krause is remarkably undervalued, not just because he helped build it, but because he took all those arrows. Like, when he's out there talking on behalf of the organization, he's doing so as a mouthpiece for Reinsdorf, doing the bidding of Reinsdorf, who made all those decisions to not pay people.
Yeah, but Dan, as I told you earlier, I mean, Krause kind of had to do it because Reinsdorf went around, asked everyone about Krause, and no one had a good word to say about him. He hired a guy that he could control that was desperate enough that would be willing to take the bullets for Jerry Reinsdorf.
But what I'm telling you is that Reinsdorf got great value after being able, even after his death, to use Jerry Krause as a meat shield. What else did you find or have you found interesting about the first eight episodes, Stan?
Well, I mean, I just the whole comparison, you know, the way they talked about the whole thing with the Pistons and, you know, and they left out some stuff. Like, they left out the fact that before that game where the Pistons walked off the floor disrespecting the Bulls, that Michael Jordan, the day before that game, had essentially disrespected and disregarded the two championships the Pistons had won. I mean, that's going to create bad blood. And it was like, if I watched this series, it was like the bad blood came all from one side, that Isaiah Thomas and his teammates were all bad guys, and the Bulls were all great guys, you know, the black hats and the white hats. And it's never... it's never quite that simple. Generally, those feuds are both sides. And then the second thing I find really interesting is how people love stories, and I get that. And so they'll buy into this stuff that, like, the reason Michael Jordan played so well against the Seattle Supersonics was because George Karl didn't say hello to him in a restaurant. Like, how about this? Michael always played well. You know why he played well? Because he was really, really good. Like, and everybody wants to, I don't know why this is, Dan, but in sports, people always want to attribute things to the intangibles. I mean, they always want to talk. I got asked the other day by a media person, is Jordan the best competitor ever? And I'm like, look, he was a great competitor. But I'm telling you, Udonis Haslam is as good a competitor as I've ever seen. The difference between Udonis Haslam and Michael Jordan is not their competitiveness. The difference is their talent. J.J. Redick is as good a competitor, I would say, as Michael Jordan. The difference is in their talent. But I guess talent, ability to play the game, is not an interesting enough story. So all of a sudden, Michael won, not because he was great, but because he used all these things to fuel his performance and because he was a better competitor than all these people. I'm just not buying any of that.
All right. We miss your crankiness so much. Oh, call God. Us back tomorrow, all right? We're going to talk to you again tomorrow. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, guys.
You don't like Jordan.
Stugatz was saying the entire time during that he hates Michael Jordan. Put it on the poll at Levitard Show. Does Stan Van Gundy hate Michael Jordan?
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. The Last Dance is now on ESPN. If that's not enough, the final episode of Detail on ESPN Plus premieres this Sunday. In this episode, Phil Jackson analyzes the deciding Game 6 that resulted in Michael Jordan's parting shot that earned Chicago its sixth title and second three-peat championship in 8 years. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Here's your SportsCenter update. A PGA Tour memo has outlined the safety protocols for the tour's upcoming tournaments. Players, caddies, and various tournament officials and employees will be sent pre-travel screening tests. They also will be required to take nasal swab or saliva test upon arrival. UFC president Dana White expects the lightweight unification bout between champion Khabib and interim champ Justin Gaethje to happen on Fight Island this summer. I can't say Khabib's last name. I can't even say Gaethje's last name. I just did it. And finally, Netflix has acquired the rights to the book The Girls of Summer to possibly create a movie about the 1999 United States women's national team. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
We will get to a question that Stu Gotz has been asking me almost every day since my wedding about my wedding in just a second.
No way.
But yes, I have not answered this question. He's been asking me since October. We're going to get to it in just a second. But before we do that, I just need to go to Billy on something because Mike Ryan, when we went to break there, Mike Ryan said on air that it was worth it to buy Undertaker dirt for $88 because of how he loves wrestling. And then we went off air and he said, mumbled to no one in particular, I would have paid $200. He wasn't even doing show. He was just, being introspective. And, first of all, Billy is laughing at all of this in a number of ways, but Billy has also realized, as many of us have, man, there is no sport that needs fans more than wrestling needs fans. Like wrestling, the whole thing is so silly. Like, it's silly under normal circumstances, but it is so silly when you're talking about wrestling not having fans. So, Billy, what made you come to this conclusion here?
So, Sunday was Money in the Bank, a pay-per-view, which isn't pay-per-view because it's free when you have the subscription. Anyways, so I'm watching Money in the Bank, and their whole thing this year, first of all, I watched WrestleMania. I'm a casual wrestling observer, and I kind of need the oohs and the ahs of the crowd to let me know something spectacular or something is just kind of normal. When I'm watching them do these moves, I'm like, is that a signature move? That just looks like a move to me. I don't know if this is a big moment or not. I kind of need the crowd to tell me if what I'm watching is good or not because I don't really know what's going on. The Money in the Bank, they tried to tweak this year, and they had them going up and down the corporate headquarter building, and they finished the match on the roof of the building. Problem was there was lots of kind of acting involved, and it was kind of more of like a comical thing where they had like these punchlines and these things with, like, in the middle of the match they broke out into like a food fight, and I was like, I feel like we're trying to not just have empty arena matches, which is what every other match was, so I guess that's what they're going for, but it didn't really work for me. Like, I didn't kind of get what they were doing. They had this guy R-Truth, which I thought was actually pretty funny, go out to the crowd that wasn't there, and he'd like hold the microphone to the crowd to like sing along with him and like just pull it back as though there was still a crowd there, but there wasn't. I just feel like wrestling needs the crowd to explain to me, a casual viewer, what's going on.
At Lebatard Show on Twitter is where you go if you want to answer the polls. The poll question is there anything in life that Dan dreads more than Billy's first of all as a phrase? Mike Ryan, as a wrestling fan, I assume that you agree with this.
Oh, yeah. It's a hard watch, particularly the WWE, because our friend Tony Khan in AEW is doing some really good stuff. Billy mentioned the comedy aspect. They had a main event that fought all throughout not just the arena that they were at in Jacksonville, which is walking distance from the actual stadium that the Jaguars play. They started fighting in the Jaguars facility, and it was hilarious.
There was a golf cart involved.
Someone got run over by a golf cart. Someone got shoved in an ice machine. There were multiple wardrobe changes. Someone got hit with a cone. It was really good. So, yeah, this is forcing some of these companies to be creative in ways that they're not used to being, and some are rising to the occasion, and some are letting us down, and WWE has recently. It's really difficult, and I didn't even consider casual fans tuning in that don't really know much of anything, but it's WrestleMania, and they have no idea who good guy or bad guy is, or what move is a finisher, and what isn't spectacular, as Billy put it, and there's a reason
you
why.
You can't even understand a world that exists where this isn't common knowledge, where everyone doesn't know what is somebody's finishing move.
Yeah, I mean, I wish you would FaceTime me, Billy, and I could walk you through all of this, but it is a very difficult watch at times right now. They're struggling. They need people.
Billy, thank you for all of your contributions to the show, at Lebatard Show. Brett Michaels going to join us here in about 15 minutes. So go ahead, Stu Gantz. The question that you've been wanting to ask me on air since my wedding, that you ask me every day off air since my wedding in October. Go ahead and have at it. The group is mesmerized here. Has this been a source of, has this been a subject that you guys have been talking about since my wedding? All right, go ahead. All right.
So we asked you who was going to be invited to the wedding, and you revealed to us at one point that Carrot Top was invited, but never showed up to the wedding. And every day since you revealed that to us, we've been asking ourselves, and I've been asking you, did Carrot Top ever give a reason?
Well, one of the parts that was disappointing about Carrot Top not being at the wedding is that evidently he was off from his regular gig at the Luxor, and he was also in Florida. But about 2 weeks before the wedding, we got a video from Carrot Top holding up the wedding invitation from his dressing room and saying that he couldn't make it while making a bunch of jokes. And so we didn't know if he was coming or not, because Carrot Top is always on video making a bunch of jokes. So I thought when I was there waiting for my wife, I thought Carrot Top was somewhere in the audience. I thought that he was just going to spring out from behind a shrub or something with a wonderful plume of orange hair and upstage the bride with a prop of some sort, some long, colorful napkin that went a mile from his pocket into the bride's dress. But I never ended up understanding. Like, he apparently, it was a serious message that he couldn't come there, but it was wrapped in so many jokes that I wasn't clear on the fact that he wasn't coming.
He would have been the most famous person at that wedding, not in terms of like outside celebrity, but I mean specifically in terms of excitement to see. We found out Carrot Top was going to be there by sleuthing, or at least we thought he would be there, because Billy Uncovered, hey, he's dark on these dates in Vegas, he's from Florida, this makes all perfect sense, he's always FaceTiming with Dan, or probably the other way around, and we were excited to see Carrot Top and take those photos and possibly take shots at a wedding with Carrot Top. And yeah, there's Pat Riley, there's someone else, there's, famous people here, Dan Patrick's there, well, whatever, where's Carrot Top? Let's get to the Carrot Top. I want the photo with Carrot Top. Carrot Top never showed.
But I still feel like we don't have an answer, and Dan really doesn't have an answer and deserves an answer. I don't feel satisfied right now. I've been waiting months for that answer, and you gave it to us, but you don't really have an answer. I mean, let's get riddles. Just tell us why to show up.
In this respect, I'm as baffled as you guys are. We can call Carrot Top. We'll call him during the break if you want, and we will see if we can get an answer here. Brett Michaels is going to join us at 12:30. I don't know what to tell you, though, Stugatz. Like, I don't have more of an answer than you do on this. I'm just marveling at the amusing spectacle of it all, because the idea of him at this wedding with you guys wanting to take pictures of him at this wedding is a touch disconcerting. I will say this, though. When Guns N' Roses returned, I've told you this story before, when Guns N' Roses returned, their first show was in Vegas. Obviously, that was a difficult ticket. Stugatz, I have rarely, and I have, been around a few famous people and seen the swell around them, I have rarely ever seen the way that his face is in that city ID for him to go wherever it is that he pleases. Like, there was no place that was off limits, and when they asked Carrot Top for identification, he would just point at his face. Like, that was some gangster stuff I was not expecting from Carrot Top. Like, he runs that city more than Wayne Newton or Robert Goulet ever have.
Gets him in anywhere except your wedding.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom, Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Here's your SportsCenter update. A PGA Tour memo has outlined the safety protocols for the tour's upcoming tournaments. Players, caddies, and various tournament officials and employees will be sent pre-travel screening tests. They also will be required to take nasal swab or saliva test upon arrival. UFC President Dana White expects the lightweight unification bout between champion Khabib and interim champ Justin Gaethje to happen on Fight Island this summer. And finally, a Facebook group in which users pretend to be an ant colony has grown to more than 1.8 million members since social distancing procedures to prevent the spread of COVID-19 were implemented in the United States. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
He's the front man for Poison. Poison sold more than 45 million records, excuse me. Brett Michaels with us on ESPN Radio. He's got a new book out. Brett, thank you for making the time for us. When you explored the idea of writing this, how vulnerable did you decide to go? How much of your life did you chronicle here, and did you go to many of the places that were hard to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I just want to say good morning and thanks for having me on. And I hope both of you, everyone there in the studio, is healthy and doing awesome through all the pandemic. I hope you guys are good. And just wanted to say on this book, I've been writing it for a while, and I hand wrote every single note. And I decided to step outside of behind the music and some of the stuff that's been out there for years and years and just do a deep dive in growing up in Pennsylvania. You know, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and then my dad was in the military, so we moved around a bit. We ended up at the Inland Naval Depot in Mechanicsburg or Harrisburg. But I just talk about all the things that goes behind ever even getting to a chance to play on the stage. And it does a deep dive, and it's the reason I wrote it in volumes is it stays current. It stays – I even wrote as close up to what's going on right now in the world as the new opening of the book, and I got to write about the crazy time I had on The Masked Singer, going all the way back to being born, you know, and just randomly going through the stories and the pictures.
You're aware, though, Brett, that what people will want from this is the sex and the drugs, right?
Oh, there's plenty of that in there. You got to have both. But I said the thing is, though, you got to do it in volumes for me, because a lot of that has been out there. The chronicles of the fist fights with me and CeCe, the sex, the drugs, the backstage parties, and then diving into both the youth, the party, the craziness, the insanity. And then it tells you the moment of impact. When you write something yourself, you're able to discuss exactly what was happening, what you were thinking before it, after it. I was even going down to where I take the pieces of paper, and if it was back to the Polaroid days, I was literally scotch tape them on to the timestamp, the moment of the story.
Tell us about the fist fights.
They were good. They were good. Me and CeCe, we had, you know, when people talk about a fist fight, I'm not talking about a couple of those chest bump, push, shove. I'm talking about knockdown, drag out, New Orleans style fist fight. One of our best ones, we were at Archie Manning's bar. He had a bar in New Orleans. And then all of a sudden, me and CeCe had a few words. And we just, listen, the truth is we're like brothers. But you're on the road every day together. And eventually, the littlest thing can throw you. And we started arguing about something, whether it was a song in the set list, somebody at the bar, whatever it was, a sports team. And the next thing you know, we were going at it. They separated us, went back to the hotel, and then threw down. The elevator door opened. CeCe did one of the best, I'm going to say, true wrestling / UFC moves I've ever seen. Took me down. I got up. At the end of it, I'll say this. I lost a tooth. I broke his nose. And it was a good fight. It was a good fight.
Brett Michaels with us on ESPN Radio. Poison frontman. Check out his biography because he's got a new one out. It's called, forgive me if I'm wrong, is it Brett Michaels Scrapography?
Yeah, it's Auto Scrapography. And for lack of a better, I won't give you the long-winded version. It's basically an auto biographical scrapbook diary that I just handwrote myself, and it talks about everything. And I grew up, a funny chapter I think we sent to you all was, you know, I called it plywood paneling in the rock jock. So my room has a poster of Terry Bradshaw on one side of my shoulder and Jimmy Page on the other side. And I had to panel it because I put 1,000 scotch tape photos on my dad's freshly painted wall. That didn't go over big. So I panel over it and I said, I grew up loving sports and music. And it's funny that both right now I am truly, when it is healthy, safe, and we're ready, I cannot wait, not wait to get to a sporting, whether baseball, football in the preseason. And I'm just ready. I'm ready.
Give us a couple of the details, Brett, on that you would use to illustrate just how reckless Poison was in the early days.
Well, let me say this. Reckless then, reckless now, because I love to party and have a good time. And I think when you're hands-on like our band, you got to remember, a lot of people forget this. Poison was truly an independent band. Like when I say we came from Pennsylvania, drove across the country, we were living it daily then and now. And it was the greatest thing that happened to us as we kept all of our publishing and our own record label, Cyanide Music. And our signing day, our super mega party signing day on an independent record was us sitting on the ground. This is no lie. El Segundo, California, in a warehouse, shrink wrapping our albums. That was our signing day. And then we would just go out. And every party, because at first you don't have tour buses, you're driving yourself. And then when the tour buses came, it got out of control because now you have time between cities to party insanely. And one of the stories on there is called Going Down the Road on a Crazy Bus. And it's just one of many occasions, but you take a moment, it gives you a snapshot of the insanity going on in the bus. But I just thought it was a good time. To me, I didn't look at it like that. It was actually normal. You know what I mean? Having a good party, and then it just slips out of control.
Describe that for us, please.
Yes, here we go. All right, so I know what you're looking for. So let's just say this. There is all, you know, band on the bus, crew on the bus, someone crawling around in the ground looking for bits of substance that might have been falling off the table with a few rolled-up dollar bills. There may have been some beer bottles broken, a lot of beautiful women that traveled on to the next city, and I'll leave it at that. It was good.
When and how did your life change, or did you realize that your life had changed from the beginning to the parts that would get tempting?
Well, it doesn't. I don't know that you ever know there's a graduation day. It's sort of just if you go out there and you love what you're doing. I mean, I still throw the best. I'm telling you, one of the best parties backstage. I meet the fans. We have a great time. I treat them great. They come out. You know, it goes from the backstage, and then if it's going to go on, it goes out to the party. But as a lifelong, I say this, a type 1 diabetic, I had to find a balance in there, and I think that's probably the best thing that's happened to me, is it saved me when a lot of my friends went down off the edge, being a type 1 diabetic and 5 injections a day since I've been 6. It pulled me back enough to be able to enjoy it, but kind of find a little bit of a balance in there to have the longevity. And if all gets healthy, be out on the stadium tour with Def Leppard and Poison and Motley and Joan Jett. If and when, you know, it's healthy for the fans, the bands, the crew, everybody.
When and how, again, the name of the book is Auto Scrapography, Brett Michaels, Auto Scrapography. When would you say was the reckless time? When would you say was the dangerous time in the history of Poison where you were able to stand back from it, observe it, and be like, man, this is a bit out of control?
Yeah, I would say that was definitely 89 into 92. About 88, 89 ran into 92 where there's a moment where I literally wrote there. When it becomes, this is what I said, when it becomes normal that you lift your legs, you're watching Scarface, you're cranking up music, there's people you have no idea who they are traveling with you to the next city, and everyone's partying, listening to music. In the moment, you're loving it. But when that becomes normal, when throwing up drunk, crawling around on the ground looking for crumbs of whatever wonderful white cocaine was laying on the ground that they had lost on when the bus would bounce, you know, and you go, this is normal. Then you go, it may be a little out of control.
What was the bigger problem, booze or drugs?
I'm gonna, you know, for each individual person, it was a different, let's say, a different substance. But I would combine both of those. I would say both.
Is there anything that you found particularly scary from within that, like whether it was happening to you or happening to one of your bandmates?
Yeah, well, this is, as a friend, even though people talk about the fist fights, all of us are best friends. We grew up together. We fought through all this together. And I think the toughest thing is when you watch somebody start to lose control, when you would watch whether one of the band members, one of your crew, that was literally starting to turn gray. We call it ashen gray, and you know it's bad. That's when it starts to hit you as a friend. You know, you realize it's a party, but the good time's gone to a really sort of an ugly bad time, and now they're unhealthy and addicted, and that's when it gets, as a friend, you go, nah, enough's enough, man. We gotta get them figured out, or it's gonna go bad. And I know all of us have been there. But it's tough to watch it happen to somebody.
Brett Michaels, Auto Scrapography, details all of this stuff in a way that is visual, and you can really get an intimate portrait of what it is that was happening there. The sex part of the lifestyle, when you hear some of the stories backstage of the demeaning of women, was there any point where you were looking around and saying, this isn't right, what it is that we're doing around here?
Well, let me correct that right away. There was no demeaning. It was a party. Music's primitive. And I've said this very openly in the book. There was no, like, demeaning of it. They'd come to the shows. We'd party, have a great time. No one was coerced, forced. It was just everyone having a good time. And I think then just a little more accepted than it is now. But like I said, I mean, music, it takes different turns and different things. But I think all of it was, to me, it was a good time. People were having a great time. And that's just the way we left it then and now. People, no one's forced to come back there. No one's being put down. Everyone's just having a party.
I was just sort of thinking of the stories where band members, not yours necessarily, throw cold cuts at women. You've heard, I mean, you certainly know all of these stories. Like that you guys didn't partake in this does not mean that at that time there weren't a whole lot of people partaking in the demeaning.
Right. And I, of course, you hear of them, but that stuff, I don't mean to be that guy, but that stuff goes on even now with the even current music, things that are happening. Whether that does for us, for me, I can only speak for, again, for me, just not, that's not my scene. That's not, there was nothing about demeaning somebody. As I said in the beginning of the book, mine's about thank you, gratitude, happy to be doing what I love, and having a great time. And that party, you know, is fun. It's awesome. Everyone's having an awesome time. And I think that's what it details. But each person has to tell their own story. For me, there's no part of me that got off putting someone down, whether it's a human or anything, just not my thing.
So 88 to 92 was the heyday, a little bit after the 86 Celtics and before the 97 Bulls, which begs the question, Brett, 86 Celtics versus 97 Bulls, who wins?
Boy, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I'm watching the whole, they're having a whole breakdown on that right now.
I'm trying to
watch both, but that would be, well, it has been, but that would be a game of insanity right there. Two of the greatest teams ever.
Yep. Who wins, though?
Brett, no, stop. Just stop. Brett, thank you. Yeah, no, we don't know. Good answer. That's a good answer, Brett. Thank you.
I don't know. It didn't happen. I mean, I didn't see it. So, yeah.
That's right. That's
thank
exactly
you guys
right.
For having me
That's
on,
exactly
man.
Right. Brett Michaels, yeah. Auto Scrapography is available now. You should see the smile on Stu Gotz's face. He updates the polls next.